coming into in the documentary competition, which my film is competing, in which Trapped, which Gideon's Army competed 3 years ago. There, 40% directors are, of the directors are women, and in you also have, but and you have directors of color. But you see, once you move through that pipeline, those people disappear. It's as if, you know, Sundance didn't happen. So a film festival, it is one of the premier film festivals in the country. Where is all that talent being recognized?
Do you support a boycott of the Oscars?
I absolutely support a boycott. You know, this reminds me of when baseball was segregated, you know, the Negro Leagues. Does anyone really think that all of the talent that was in the sport was being recognized? How can you possibly look at the films that are coming out and think that the best, you know, the Oscars are supposed to represent the best of what we have to offer? How can that possibly be if no, none of these fine films are recognized?
And Spike Lee's comment that it's about the gatekeepers.
I think it absolutely is about the gatekeepers, but I don't think we should absolve the voting members of the Academy. I think that there's a real focus on their...
Dawn Porter, thanks so much. Her film is called Trapped. It airs on PBS on...
In June,
and we will talk about it when it's coming out. That does it for our show. Very happy birthday to Tarina Nadura. Democracy Now! Has two job openings, Director of Finance Operations and Development Director. Visit democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gattis, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Our website is democracynow.org.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is more talk radio with our hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today's guest is Michael Dale, executive director at the Northwest Workers Justice Project, who will talk about wage theft and how some Oregon workers aren't getting paid what they are owed.
On Monday, February 15th, at 6:30 p.m., Prison Pipeline will air a Valentine's Day special to bring to light the fact that, because of incarceration, many people are separated from their friends, family, and lovers on Valentine's Day. We will be reading your short messages to your friends and loved ones on air. So whether you are behind bars and reaching out, or are out and reaching in, we welcome you to mail or email us your Valentine's messages. Our email address is kboopc@gmail.com and our address is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Address your messages to Prison Pipeline Collective. Then tune in on February 15th at 6:30 p.m. to hear your messages read on air.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Ultramagnetic Tuesday Nights Deep House at the Analog Cafe in Portland. That's every Tuesday night in January featuring Mixmaster DJ Jopamine with doors opening at 9 and music starting at 10 p.m. Again, that's Ultramagnetic Deep House Tuesday nights in January at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Youth Summit, taking place February 12th and February 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club in Portland. February 12th will feature a workshop called Healing Ourselves to Raise Our Future and a performance by spoken word artist S. Renee Mitchell. February 13th will feature workshops on topics ranging from becoming an MC to healthy living to information on going to Africa. That evening, the summit will close with a youth talent showcase. Again, that's the Portland Youth Summit, February 12th and 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club, 5250 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and KBOO.FM over the World Wide Web. This is More Talk Radio, and I am Cecil Prescott. Today is Monday, January 25th, 2016. Today we are continuing a discussion about concerns of working people in Oregon. Today we are pleased to have with us the executive director of the Northwest Workers' Justice Project, Michael Dale, who will tell us about the exciting and important work that his organization is doing. Let me give you our phone numbers so that you may join our conversation. You may call us at 503-231-8187 if you have a question or comment, and we hope that you feel free to do so. Let me remind you to not wait until the end of the program to ensure that we can get you on the air. Thank you, Michael, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and thanks also for your interest in this important issue.
Well, why don't we begin by telling us a little bit about what is the Northwest Workers' Justice Project and the organization?
The Northwest Workers' Justice Project is a nonprofit law firm that provides advice and representation to low-wage workers on issues having to do with their work. We have a particular focus on the organizing rights of low-wage workers, on the rights of contingent workers. By contingent, I'm talking about all the people that are working their butts off but don't have a job. Mm-hmm. Might be day haul, day labor people. It might be people working as a subcontractor when they're really an employee, that sort of thing. So rights of contingent workers, rights of immigrant workers, not so much as immigrants, but as immigrants in the workplace. And then we also work on expanding access to legal representation on employment matters by low-wage workers.
And how long has it been around?
We've been around for about 12 years now, a little over 12 years.
Great. And the focus today we want to talk about is the phenomenon called wage theft. And maybe just tell us what's the definition of that and where does that term come from?
Yeah, that's a term that's starting to be used nationally. And it basically is any time a worker doesn't get paid, deliberately doesn't get paid, for work that they've done. It happens lots of different ways. Sometimes it's the deal where you the time clock starts at 9, but you're required to be there at 8:45 to set up and then stay a little bit afterwards to clean up, but you don't get paid for those hours. Sometimes it happens by not paying the minimum wage. Sometimes, and people out there should know, by the way, that the mere fact that you're paid by some kind of a piece rate, so much a pound, so much a square foot or whatever, doesn't mean that you're still not supposed to get paid the minimum wage. Most workers in Oregon are required to be paid at least the minimum wage. So it might be not paying minimum wage. It's amazing. It's amazing the number of businesses that will say, oh, we don't pay overtime here. Well, that's a requirement.
Right.
It sometimes happens that way. Sometimes it happens with people just not paying. Just, you know, I'm not going to pay you. I don't have to.
Or if they are being paid overtime, it may show up in a different configuration that's hard to tap into. You may get comp time, but you may not be allowed to use it.
That's right. And comp time under certain circumstances can be legal if it's a public employer,
right.
But comp time is not legal for a private employer.
Now, when you say private versus public, how do organizations like nonprofits or nonprofit service organizations fit into that?
They're private employers.
Okay, so that means that they're required to pay that time and a half comp time, and it should be either accessible to take off or it should be convertible to cash.
It should be convertible. It should be cash.
It should be cash.
Comp time is not a something that you can do. Now, there are some categories of employees, managers.
Correct, yeah.
Confidential employees, if they get paid a certain level, that are exempt from overtime.
And they're usually about called salaried employees.
They would have to be salaried employees, yeah.
Okay.
Although I would also add, if your salary doesn't necessarily mean that you're not entitled to overtime. It's a
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting, because there are a lot of public and semi-private nonprofits where I hear that people are not paid overtime, but they're expected to work an exorbitant amount of hours.
Well, you'd have to look at the details of what the person does to know whether that would be legal or not, but it certainly would be worth checking into.
Okay.
So, you know, recently there, last fall, Thanksgiving, there's been some recent high-profile wage theft. In terms of the construction industry, some settlements, and that I think raised the profile that this might be an issue for people who we thought were somehow protected. You know, when I first hear the term wage theft, I usually think of maybe day laborers who who do not get paid what they were promised to get paid, but that's not necessarily true. That's the only.
It is not necessarily true. Now, what is true is that workers who are vulnerable are more likely to be exploited than workers that have a little bit more protection. And day laborers may have issues that make them very exploitable. However, if you look at the claims that are made with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which is the enforcement agency, the public enforcement agency that helps some workers with wage theft problems, actually the highest number of complaints don't come from day labor. It comes from, it's in the retail and service sector. And then the highest proportionally is in construction. So day laborers do suffer wage theft, but wage theft crosses ethnic boundaries, crosses racial boundaries, crosses industries.
And how does it might show up? So I'm working retail, and I get my paycheck, and do I notice that I'm not getting what I thought I would get? Or?
It could be any number of ways. It may be because maybe your shift starts at 9, but you need to be there no later than 8:45 because you have to set up or you have to do things in preparation for your day. It may be that you have to clean up afterwards and you're not given credit for that. It might be that way. It might be that you're working a little bit of overtime, but that isn't figured in. That in retail, that would be typical the way that things would come up.
And so I recognize that I'm not getting paid what I'm supposed to get paid. A recourse might go to my employer.
One can talk to the employer. Many people, actually, what probably happens most of the time is that no complaint is made because people are afraid. People are afraid they'll be fired if they raised any questions about it. But actually, such a firing would be illegal under existing Oregon law, and there are remedies provided for that. You can go, I mentioned the Bureau of Labor and Industry, or we call it BOLI.
Yes.
BOLI has services that are provided to people at no cost to help with collection of wages. You can also go to a private attorney. It could be any private attorney, or it could be someplace like Legal Services, or our office provides this assistance to workers on occasion. where you can actually file a lawsuit to collect your wages. And the advantage of doing that is that the law also provides for penalty damages if you are shown to have not been paid. If you think about it, the rent doesn't wait. They're not going to give you groceries on credit. If you don't get your paycheck on payday, it costs you more than just the money you're out. It costs you a lot of other things. You may lose a car. You may get evicted.
And you may incur penalties yourself.
That's right. That's right.
And so with regard to approaching a private attorney, we do know that BOLI does not have a fee. What kinds of fees do the private attorneys charge, and how would a person who maybe does not have that money be able to access those services?
Actually, I mean, there are attorneys that provide
pro bono,
cost-free legal services, like the legal services programs in Northwest Worker Justice Project, but also private attorneys that work in this area generally understand that somebody who's got a wage claim probably is out of a job and probably doesn't have money. And so those that will undertake this kind of representation realize that they need to do it on what's called a contingent fee basis, which is basically they'll bring the case for you and then you have to pay only if you recover, and it would be some percentage of what the recovery would be.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. I'm here with my co-host, Celeste Carey.
Good morning.
We're speaking with Michael Dale, who is the executive director of Northwest Workers Justice Project. And we're speaking this morning about wage theft. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We would like to hear from people who have had problems either collecting their wages, might have stories to share.
May have questions.
Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Now, I'm going to go back to BOLI because that's the state agency that is over both labor and industry. So I was not paid what I was supposed to get paid. I go to BOLI, you know, certainly they have the resources to look at those claims. Is it an easy process?
Well, I would have to differ with your presumption that they have the resources to look at. They do have some resources, and they do help lots of people, and they do good work for people that they do serve. They tend not to collect the penalties. They tend to collect only the unpaid wages, and they don't really have the resources even to do that. You know, when I first started practicing, BOLI had offices in Pendleton, in Bend, in Medford. Now they have offices only in Eugene, Portland, and Salem that can provide direct help with this sort of thing. So that's a problem. And then the total resources available, the statistics we have only go back to 1991. I actually know that there were big cuts in BOLI during the 80s, during the spotted owl recession.
Again in the 90s.
Even prior to that. But if you just go back to a base of 1991, what we see is that BOLI has about half the resources per worker in the economy to address this that they had in 1990. And nobody thought they had all the resources they needed back then. That wasn't even the high watermark. The high watermark was probably sometime in the early 80s, and nobody thought they had the resources they needed then. So we've just cut and cut and cut and cut, and then we're surprised that wage theft has now become an epidemic. There are no cops on the beat. Yeah. Not no cops, but there are, we've substantially reduce the resources available.
So there's a challenge there in terms of resources there in state level in terms of support. So that So the one thing is to look at why is that the case? Why is there not enough resources for Boley? And maybe we'll talk about that in a second. But I also don't want to ignore the fact that recently there was the Senate and the legislature will be in session in February. And recently I understand that there were hearings done before committees that your organization was a part of addressing some of these issues.
Yes, the and by the way, well, I want to say two things about that. First, just as an aside, our organization, yes, was a part of it. We're part of a coalition to stop wage theft, which is 38 really important dynamic organizations. I want to give them credit. Yes. And also, we're part of the Fair Shot agenda of the Fair Shot Coalition, who also is supportive. So there are lots of other organizations that are involved in this issue. There will be a bill in the upcoming session of the legislature. It's not a big bill. It's not everything that we think needs to happen to give workers the tools they need. It's a short session, and in a short session, you can only get so much done. But what we did is we took pieces of several bills that had been vetted in the 2015 session and weren't as controversial as some other things, and put them in a bill that maybe we can persuade people to do in the very limited time that's in
the upcoming session.
Yeah, the upcoming session is only 4 weeks long, and it's basically for things that are not that controversial. So we have several provisions. One of them actually is addressed specifically to the question of Boley resources. Mm-hmm. It would increase Boley resources some, although it would restore three positions. To actually get us back to the 1991 level, mm-hmm. you'd have to double the Boley budget. That would take about $9 million, and that's just not in the cards. It's not going to happen.
So where would that budget come from? Would that be like a general fund issue, or are there other revenues that would support Boley?
There are general fund revenues that go to Boley now, but mm-hmm. the increase would not come from there. The increase would come from a fund that Boley administers called the Wage Security Fund. Basically, it's to pay wages for folks who don't get paid because their employer goes out of business.
Okay.
There's more money in that fund on an annual basis than is usually used, mm-hmm. and so some of those funds would be diverted and used for target enhanced enforcement at Boley. So that's one of the things that we're doing.
That's an easier acquisition, isn't it?
Than the general funds, yes.
Yeah, it's just a line item reallocation right. there. Okay.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, though, we want to do is you referred to the problem with getting a private attorney. Mm-hmm. We want to make it easier and cheaper for workers to be able to get these problems solved on their own outside of Boley, and that is by making sure that they can get quick access to their wealth. To start out with, every time you get paid, you get a pay stub. Now, most of us in the working world just take that as a matter of course. But believe me, in some forms of work, that's not common.
Oh, my goodness. Nowadays, you might get a Visa card with your payment.
Well, at least you would get something.
Yes.
You might get mm-hmm. an envelope. You might get cash. Mm-hmm. So the idea is you get a pay stub, and the pay stub says how your wages were calculated, what period it's for, how many hours you're being credited with, and so forth. So you can figure out, number one, and number two, prove exactly what the basis of your pay was. And we create a means whereby workers can get that without having to file a lawsuit first.
Mm-hmm.
And that should save money for everybody, because if we could get access to the wage records up front, then maybe we can sit down and work it out. And that also ought to expand access to attorneys, because the cost that an attorney would have to invest in a case ought to, on average, be less if they're getting that wage information up front. So that's a second way we're trying to expand access to resources to be able to collect your wages.
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 if you are in Points East along the Columbia River Gorge, in the Willamette River Valley, it's 104.3, and on the web, kboo.fm. We welcome your questions today as we talk about wage theft and ways that you might remedy your problems or share the information that you have learned or experienced. 503-231-8187. It is 8:24, so we recommend that you get your questions in soon because the program is only going to last for roughly 26 more minutes, and we know there are people out there with questions, so this is a good time to call, get some information to help out yourself or your family. One of the things that I wanted to add, you were, and Cecil, you kind of brought this up too, in a sideways fashion, is why is there so much concern about wage theft now that we're hearing? And I can imagine, as you said, part of it is because of the lack of regulatory forces, such as the cuts that have occurred at Boley. But it seems to me that there's also the issue of more of it happening. I have friends who, for some, this is good because they have a very responsible employer who may pay them with what do they call these cards now, these cash cards, you know, like you get from high-profile companies like Visa or MasterCard or whatever. And then you get some people for whom that arrangement does not work out. But as a rule, what I've asked some of my colleagues who get paid in this fashion, well, how do you account for your pay? As you mentioned, you know, legal deductions, hours worked, et cetera. But then for some of them, there's also the challenge that it costs every time they access their legal wages through a pay card. Now, is that something that people can examine and maybe bring a suit for?
Well, at present, there's some regulation in that area, probably not enough. We're not addressing that in this short session of the legislature. It is a problem for some workers. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, if you draw all your money out in one lump sum, you don't have charges, or you're not supposed to have charges. Mm-hmm. But if you make multiple withdrawals, then they charge for every withdrawal, and that turns out to be expensive, and people often don't know about it ahead
right.
of time.
So that right now, as we understand, wage theft is not considered wage theft?
It's well, there are theories about that.
Okay, so that's a new area that hasn't really been thoroughly.
It's not really clear.
Okay, well, it's good to know that at least people are becoming aware of it, because I've really at many points when I've heard that, I've referred people to either private representation or Boley for that very reason, because maybe it may not be wage theft, quote unquote, by the employer, but they're still paying an unreasonable fee to access what's legally theirs.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio. Our guest this morning is Michael Dale with the Northwest Justice Workers Project. And we'll go to our first caller. Shante, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Can you tell me what Boley means? I don't know what you're referring to when you keep saying Boley, Boley, Boley.
Very good. Thank you.
Yes.
The Bureau of Labor and Industries, which is a state agency that has some responsibility for helping workers collect wages. And I'm sorry for the jargon.
Bureau of Labor and Industries?
That's yes. Right.
Uh-huh. And that's a state bureau that you access by just looking up those words online?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Shante. And we'll go to our next caller. Andrew, good morning.
Hey there.
Good morning.
Good morning. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I do hardwood floors. Thankfully, now I own my own company and work for myself, so all of this is behind me, but it's very popular in town for employers, simply when they don't get paid on a job, to push that down the line to the workers, actually. You know, oftentimes they say it's their fault. You know, a job didn't, you know, come up to snuff and didn't get paid on simply because of lack of quality. But employers simply say, you know, where else are you going to go? It's a small town, and you can basically eat the amount of money you lost on the job, and hopefully work some weekends and some overtime to maybe, well, it would be initial time at that point, to make up, you know, your mortgage payment and all that. But what would you recommend to workers put in that situation?
Well, that's a hard situation, because what it means is that basically your livelihood is at stake only to get paid what you earned. But I would recommend that employers who are not properly paying, it doesn't just happen once. It's going to happen again. And you have a right to be paid what you earned. And I would recommend that people go to see an attorney, or go to the Bureau of Labor and Industries and make a wage complaint. In construction, there also is a possibility of getting paid through construction contractors have to be registered through something called the CCB, which is also a state agency, and they have to post a bond that is available to help satisfy wage claims, and that's another route that people could take. And just figure that rather than hanging on to a job where somebody's going to cheat you, you're going to need to probably find another job. That's not legal to be retaliated against, but it may occur, and you've got to protect yourself. So be thinking about where you're going to jump to. If you are fired, that also is unlawful, and you can seek a remedy for that as well. I understand that people don't want to do that because they don't want to be labeled as a troublemaker, uh-huh, and they don't want to be blackballed in the industry. But
yeah,
you know what? If workers put up with that, then that's what we'll have. And it's only by workers standing up to that abuse that'll ever change. And if you think about it, wage theft doesn't just hurt workers. It hurts the employer that's trying to do the right thing, because that employer that's not paying you is in competition with others who may be trying to do the right thing, but because you're not getting paid, that employer is able to probably bid a little bit lower, and so it just chases everything to the lowest common denominator. Wage theft hurts good employers that are trying to do the right thing. It really undercuts their efforts to do that. It hurts communities as well, because you don't spend the money that you didn't get paid in the grocery store or down at Target to get clothes for your kids, and you don't pay taxes on that either. So it's bad for the whole economy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you, Andrew.
And I wanted to pass on the phone number for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. It is 971-673-0761. And if you're here in Portland or really close at hand here in Portland, the address is 800, that's 800 Northeast Oregon, and the zip code is 97232. So you'll have a chance to go by. If you can't make it to Portland, you can find that information by doing a search online for Capitals, gives you the best access. B-O-L-I, Oregon.
And we'll go to our next caller. Barth, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks to your guest for fighting the good fight for all these years. I wonder if you have a counterpart agency or can recommend anybody to talk to in the state of Washington, because we have some issues over here too. And one other comment before I listen. The employer or employing company that consistently docks makes workers forfeit wages makes themselves wealthier, has more working capital, can compensate the people that are doing this at a higher level, and basically has more resources to fight this. So it's not just that your boss is pocketing 10 bucks or 50 bucks of your money. It's that if they're doing this to you, they're probably doing it to somebody else, and that that can amount to literally thousands and ten thousands of dollars a month or a year. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Thanks.
Thank you.
A similar organization in Washington State would be Columbia Legal Services.
Okay. Are they in Vancouver or in Salem or in Salem? Olympia or what?
Probably the best thing to do is to Google something called CLEAR, C-L-E-A-R, which is a statewide hotline and will refer you to the appropriate office closest to you.
Thanks a ton. Good day.
All right. And there is a Washington Bureau of Labor, State Department of Labor and Industries, and we'll see if we can also get that number as well. But I do recall what you said, Michael, about there being either backlog or truncated staff, a short amount of staff. So it's probably just as good to consider either option.
I would suggest that people consider both and decide what's best for them based on their personal situation.
You mentioned that you're part of a coalition in terms of, and I think that's important, that, and it's, earlier you stated how it weights that impact the wider community. Share some things that what brought the coalition together and what keeps the coalition together.
Well, what brought the coalition together was there's a growing recognition across the country that this is a problem. And in national currents among people that work with workers, there are campaigns throughout the country. Chicago has been a real leader. Los Angeles has been a real leader in this area and other places as well. And the frustrations that those of us who work in this area see all the time, combined with the national impetus to try to do something about it legislatively, sort of coalesced maybe 6 years ago or something like that. And what keeps the coalition together is just the moral imperative of workers need to be paid what they're earned. If you look in any of the great religious traditions, they all have scripture, they all have teachings that say, you know, you pay the worker.
Honest wages.
That's right. That's right.
And it seems as if this is an issue that can bring people together across normal divides. So it isn't a progressive or conservative issue. It's an issue for all people. All people are impacted.
A good example of that is I mentioned that we took less controversial pieces of different bills. Mm-hmm. One of the pieces that we picked up was a proposal that was actually made by the largest construction contractor in the Northwest. And basically what it has to do with is, I don't want to get too far down in the weeds here, but when you do constructions that's funded by public funds, there's a special prevailing wage that you're supposed to pay. And subcontractors of contractors are also supposed to pay that special prevailing wage. And basically this construction company brought legislation in the last session of the legislature that said that there's a big problem here, and if people aren't doing that and they're not doing it deliberately and substantially underpaying, then theft is theft is theft. It's a crime, and it ought to be a felony. And so it creates a felony when people underpay substantially, deliberately underpay the prevailing wage substantially.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is More Talk Radio with Celeste Carey. My name is Cecil Prescott. We are speaking with Michael Dale of the Northwest Justice Workers Project. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Give us a call if you have a question about wages, about how to get your wages, if you've been a victim of wage theft, or if you have a story to share. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And Michael, if someone wants to get in touch with your organization, how might they do so?
We're on the internet at www.nwjp.org, or our number is 503-525-8454.
At the as workers try to collect their earnings that they have, I read, I'm not sure whether it was one of your papers or of someone else, that sometimes when it's concluded that workers, employees, need to pay their workers, that sometimes they only pay a fraction of what is owed. Could you talk
one
about
of the
that?
One of the big problems that we face in this area, particularly with the sort of lower class of employers who are basically scamming. We see people start businesses in the business, pick up, start a different business with a different name, maybe under the name of a relative, and then when there are judgments against that entity, they move yet again, and mm-hmm. So it can be difficult. And this is for private attorneys. This is also for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Also has this trouble that even when it's determined, even when you overcome your fear and make a complaint, go through the legal process, spend months and months doing that, and get a judgment, sometimes it becomes very difficult to collect the judgment. And that's an issue that we'll probably look at again in the 2017 session. But just as an example, of the $4.7 million average that BOLI determines every year that is owed by employers, employers actually pay only about a quarter of that, even with the resources of the state to try to enforce it. So we need also, in addition to more resources to enforce, we also need to have better tools to be able to collect the wages once they're determined to be done.
Are there federal counterparts that assist?
There are. The United States Department of Labor enforces wage laws. They enforce the federal minimum wage, and they enforce overtime. Now, the federal minimum wage, I wouldn't suggest going there to get the federal minimum wage, because you deserve, if you're entitled to the federal minimum wage, you're entitled to Oregon's minimum wage, which is, of course, quite a bit higher.
Right.
And they will only enforce the federal minimum wage. They're a great resource for overtime claims, and they also have resources to be able to proactively investigate a firm that, you know, if I'm not getting paid overtime, probably others in my situation aren't either, and they may not be courageous enough to come forward and complain about it. They can actually go in and ask for records and go through and provide a relief for multiple workers where that's the situation, but primarily for overtime.
Yes.
You are listening to More Talk Radio. It's 8:43. We encourage you to call in with your questions or concerns. Now, we know in this particular economic climate, with concerns about pay equity, and even with the idea that we could get a $15 an hour wage, there are some areas of the state who have been told that they won't get it because the cost of living may not be high. So if you have questions about how to access services at the Northwest Justice Program, Northwest Workers Justice Program, this is a good time to call in, 503-231-8187.
I want to broaden the conversation just a little bit to find out more about your organization, Northwest Justice Project. So this might be just one area that you work on in terms of wage theft. What are some of the other projects you might focus on?
Thanks for asking. There are a couple of areas that we're becoming more involved in. We haven't traditionally been as involved in. Well, first, let me say we also advocate with respect to discrimination, retaliation, those kinds of questions, and that's mm-hmm. something we've always done. We're expanding our services in a couple of areas. One is the tremendous overuse of criminalization in our society. You know, we incarcerate more people than any place in the world, in the civilized world, certainly. And okay, so you can argue about that one way or the other, but whatever you feel about that, it seems that when someone has paid their debt to society, that should be the end of it, and they should be able to go and start a new life and be okay. But what happens is that we're creating a whole new underclass of exploitable workers who are afraid to join a union, afraid to stand up for their rights, afraid to make a wage claim, for example, because they can't find another job. And why can't they find another job is because they have a criminal conviction. And we've got a little bit of a start of that in Oregon and, uh-huh. and in Portland in particular with the Ban the Box initiative. Yes. There's a lot more work to be done. Now, certainly there are situations where your past record probably disqualifies you from
certain classes of jobs. And possibly legitimately. We'll just throw that out there.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
When you've been criminalized for behavior that is not inherently criminal and you have legal history, that's a different story.
That's one of the issues. The other thing is that even if you, I forget the statistics, so this is just kind of sure. in the ballpark. Don't please.
We won't hold
there.
You. Yeah.
But after I think it's about 6 years of non-recidivism. In other words, mm-hmm. you've been convicted of a crime,
but you paid your time. You've done what you should have done. Met the
lived
conditions.
A straight mm-hmm. And lived a straight and narrow after you got out of jail or prison.
Or parole.
You're no more likely to reoffend than someone in the general population.
Right.
So at a certain point, it seems like you ought to be able to clear your record and be able to get considered for other kinds of positions. You know, and if you're talking about a bank teller and your convictions for embezzlement, well, maybe not. But mm-hmm. if you're a child molester and it's a child care worker.
Maybe not.
Probably not.
Nothing in the medical field, probably.
Right. But there are situations you should be able to.
Right.
So that's one of the areas. Another area we're starting to look at is worker health and safety and trying to make the system work better for the workers we traditionally represent, that being low-wage immigrant and contingent workers.
Excellent. We're speaking with Mike O'Dell of the Northwest Justice Worker Project. We have 10 minutes left. We have a few callers online, so let's try to get to first Jerry. Good morning, Jerry.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you.
Good. My question is it mandatory for any company to withhold 30 minutes for your lunchtime, whether you take a lunch or not?
That's a good question.
Actually, it's not only not mandatory, it's illegal. It not whether you take it or not, but if you what started to happen is we have these computer programs and they just program it so that automatically 30 minutes is taken off your lunch,
yes.
Off your pay for lunch.
Some places do not pay for your lunch on the clock, too, so you need to be sure. I know a lot of public and governmental agencies may not pay for your lunch on the clock.
Okay. Those are two separate questions.
Okay.
Lunch periods don't have to be paid as long as you're relieved of all duties for at least 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if you work at all during your lunch, you're required to work at all during your lunch, then you're supposed to be paid for that lunch. And if the computer program is automatically deducting 30 minutes for lunch, that's unlawful.
Okay, well, whether I have a job, the days are never the same because it depends on what kind of a load we have. And if we have a really heavy load, we can't take a lunch. And if we do have a lunch, we have to take it in our work vehicle, but we're working. We're not pulled over somewhere taking a 30-minute breather. We're actually still working while we're eating our lunch. For instance, having the sandwich and going to one of your stops and then doing your job and then coming back, going to the next stop, and still eating your lunch on the way while you're working. And it always bothered me that they keep telling me, well, we have to take your half an hour out. You should take lunch. Well, I can't take a lunch because I'm working.
Well, based on your description of the situation, without knowing all the ins and outs and details of it, it sounds to me as though that's not a lawful practice to deduct time for your lunch.
Okay, that's what I thought, but, you know, how do I recoup that then?
Well, it's the same story. You go to BOLI or you go to a private attorney.
No. The BOLI thing, I think, is misleading. With several employees and I have tried the BOLI thing, and you know what they're telling us? It's not a sexy story, and that's the truth. They're not using those exact same words, but what they're saying is they don't have the funds to fight those kind of fights. Mm-hmm. What they tell us is they will help us if we've been discriminated against for either sexual discrimination or sexual harassment or racial discrimination. But they are not interested in helping anyone collect any fees or wages of their own. And there have been several of us at my job who have tried BOLI. I've contacted BOLI twice, and they're both. All they want to do is they want racial discrimination, sexual discrimination, or something sex. They don't care about people who aren't being paid. So I think you telling people to call BOLI is misleading because they're going to get the same runaround that me and several others at my job have tried.
What?
We have paperwork, letters from BOLI and emails from BOLI telling us that very thing. We actually have proof on paper telling us that the
last we believe you, so let Michael answer for you.
It occurs to me you may have called the wrong, I almost, when we were talking about BOLI earlier, I almost meant to make this point. There are two different agencies that are part of BOLI. And it sounds like you got connected with the Civil Rights Division of BOLI, which does enforce discrimination and sexual harassment and that sort of thing, and does not have any responsibility for wage matters. Who you want to talk to is the Wage and Hour Division of BOLI.
Okay.
They enforce the wage stuff, and you know, they may not be able to be helpful. I don't know. You'd have to talk to them about that. But there is also the option of the private attorney, and probably, if this affects a number of workers, you probably could get represented on a contingent fee basis to be able to go back and forth. Yeah.
Hey, Jerry, yeah. you're breaking up, but thank you for your good questions.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. And let's go to our next caller. Jared, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for the show. Hey, is there a statute of limitations on...
There is. There is a statute of limitations. The limitations period depends upon the kind of claim you're bringing. A general wage claim, the statute of limitations is 6 years. A minimum wage claim in Oregon, it's 6 years. Federally, it's 2 years, sometimes 3 years if it's a willful violation. For overtime claims, it's 2 years only.
And do you have any recommendations for private attorneys in Portland?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
But contact the organization.
You certainly could contact the organization. That's right.
Your organization?
Yes.
And what? How do I do that?
It's 503-525-8454.
Okay. I for all of 2013, my boss kept giving me draws and kept telling me he's going to get caught up on the taxes. And I kind of wrote it out. And then finally in 2014, he went bankrupt and then just ended up owing me tens of thousands of dollars.
Well, this is a problem. Bankruptcy does relieve people from an obligation to pay. That's a problem we sometimes bump into. But somebody could look into it.
Okay.
Well, it was suggested also that I give folks the website. It's www.nwjp.org.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you so much. And let's see if we can get to our last caller. Joanna, good morning.
Hi. I have a question pertaining to in-home caregiving when you work for an agency. I realize that they pay you a 24-hour shift to go into a home and take care of one person, so you get paid for that 24-hour shift. Now, if you're going into the home and you're taking care of two people that both have dementia and they both have a care plan, do you get double that $150 or do you just get the $150 for both?
You know, your question is a great question, but it's one that's so specific that I'd want to sit down with the rules, which have changed significantly recently, and I'd hesitate off the top of my head to try to give you a response.
Okay.
Are you union?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just kind of, taking care of one person with dementia is really challenging.
Yes.
For 24 hours. And then you add another person to that is just as bad as the first one. And my agency is only paying the caregivers $150 to take care of both of the people, and so I refuse to go anymore. I won't go anymore, but I know other caregivers are doing that. So I just wanted to know if that was, if they were by law doing the right thing. So
okay, well, you may also want to look at your contract and see what it says.
Oh, okay, okay, all right. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Michael, as you saw from that flurry of calls, that there are a lot of issues that workers have in terms of their wages and just compensation.
We barely scratched the surface.
So I want to thank you, Michael Dale. And again, I want to recommend that people go to Northwest Justice Workers Project to find out more about their work. And if you have concerns about wage theft or your wages, they are a good place to go.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. This is Cecil Prescott, and for my co-host Celeste Carey, we wish you a good day.
This is John Shack, host of Religion for Life. I'm beginning a series called Islam 101, Meet Your Muslim Neighbor. I'll be talking with local Muslims in the Portland area, as well as Quranic scholars. This week, I speak with Ali Hadroj of the Islamic Center of Portland. Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
Eyes for Allah, nothing but Allah. Ba is the beginning of Bismillah. Ta is for taqwa, bewaring of Allah.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of Warrior, The Life of Leonard Peltier, Saturday, February 6th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Warrior tells the true story of Leonard Peltier, the American Indian leader locked away for life in Leavenworth Penitentiary. Warrior takes us back to the violent confrontations at Pine Ridge and Wounded Knee in the 70s, and through Peltier's harrowing odyssey through the American justice system. Leonard's son, Chauncey Peltier, will hold a Q&A after the film. Again, that's Warrior, The Life of Leonard Peltier, Saturday, February 6th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.